This is episode number 755 of the Secret Identity Podcast, and today in What's New, we're going to talk about Gotham City Sirens, Spider-Man Homecoming, Blizzard's book publishing, and more. Our comics this week will be Superman Annual number 1, Clone Conspiracy number 3, Suicide Squad number 8, and Venom number 1.
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
The Human Torch was denied a bank loan.
This is all your fault, you!
Get that finger out of your ear. You don't know where that finger's been.
Why do you keep staring at me?
You have 20 seconds to comply.
And welcome everybody to Secret Identity. This is Brian Letendry here, as always, with the lovely, the talented, the beautiful, the chilly Matthew A. Herring. How are you today, sir?
Doing well. And this, I will say, is probably the first winter in my entire life I'm going outside going, look cold out there.
Well, I'll just put it this way. You're wearing pants right now.
Yes,
so
I am wearing pants.
That tells everybody all that they need to know, because you are normally a shorts 365 days a year guy. So if Matt's wearing pants, it's cold outside.
Yeah, we have hit it. It's I probably will be doing some pond skating this weekend.
There you go.
Which is the best part and only good part of the really frigid cold weather that we got.
Yes, it's very chilly out, but it's wintertime. It's supposed to be chilly.
Yep.
So it would be nice if we got a few more snowflakes. Not too many.
Yeah.
But a few more in order to have a white Christmas. But yeah, so let's jump right into the news, Matthew, because we're in a bit of a time constraint this week. As we mentioned the past couple of weeks, like, it has been literally insane.
Yes.
Trying to get this show recorded, but also dealing with life right now.
How are you doing, by the way, with your other podcasts?
Well, the good news about the other podcasts is none of them are on anywhere near this schedule. And so for Thrash It Out, we do roughly an episode a month.
Uh-huh.
And so we have one more to go before the end of the year. That'll probably get recorded either this weekend or next weekend. For Co-op Critics, we have one more to go before the end of the year. That is more like an every month and a half or so podcast. So that one will be done. And then the writing one has been kind of on the shelf for a little while. So really, this is the regular podcast. Thrash It Out is the semi-regular podcast. And then Co-op Critics is the even less semi-regular podcast. So
because I am now putting the December 53.5 episode into a December January 53.5 just because everything caught up. I'm three chapters away from finishing my latest book.
Awesome.
And I am fired up and wanting to finish that. The folks at Striper got a lot of stuff going on, but the tour is over. Everything's kind of on a quiet. So it was suggested, don't kill yourself. Do a Christmas into February episode.
There you go.
I said, yep, thank you.
Well, the nice thing about the Striper stuff is that they have made Christmas music before.
Yes.
So you can always factor that into the mix. So
yeah, so we got a couple Christmas songs. I got a lot of people that have sent Christmas messages, so the show will be sprinkled with that.
Yes. The next episode of Thrash It Out is an album from a band called Death.
Uh-huh.
So it's not exactly a Christmas album, the one that we're doing this one, but yeah. So yeah, it's crazy times right now. But you know what, Matthew? The news goes on.
It does.
And this week, over at The Beat, news about the team-up between David Ayer and Margot Robbie. So they said over at The Beat, the David Ayer-directed Suicide Squad, while not appealing to most critics, it landed around 26% on Rotten Tomatoes. For whatever that's worth to you, it says, ended up a sizable box office hit, clearing over $745 million worldwide. We talked about that quite a few times on this show, that really surpassed all expectations in terms of revenue.
Considering the first few weeks, it was a little hairy.
Well, and considering that it's a fun but kind of uneven movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it ended up doing, and I don't know the final numbers of Deadpool, but I think they ended up doing somewhere around the same ballpark of revenue there. And it says, with that in mind, WB is looking to stay in the Ayer business. And while there are still plans in place for a Suicide Squad sequel, and even a possible Deadshot spinoff, which I heard is becoming closer and closer to a reality, the most immediate project looks to reteam Ayer with Suicide Squad Margot Robbie. The duo will come together for Gotham City Sirens, a DC super villainous team-up. that will center on Robbie's Harley Quinn, and shares a name with the Paul Dini, Gilliam March ongoing series from the turn of the decade. The series that starred Quinn, Poison Ivy, and Catwoman. Will the movie do the same? It seems likely.
I think that is a perfect idea.
It says the script is being written by Geneva Robertson-Dwarrett, who is the scribe behind the upcoming Tomb Raider remake as well. Ayer will step back behind the camera to again direct. According to THR, this is now on the fast track, though no release date has been set as of yet, and any worries regarding the troubled production that plagued Suicide Squad have been cast aside. So, as you just said, I think that is a very smart move. Clearly, Margot Robbie came out of that movie as the star of that movie. And I think that makes perfect sense for them to do a movie, if they stick to Poison Ivy and Catwoman and Harley Quinn, a movie that already has a built-in fan base.
Yeah, especially if they do it an all-ages movie. You have a whole entire female reading base, watching base.
Our friend Daryl just smashed his computer when you said all ages, by the way.
Yes, I know he did. I could hear it from we heard the noise from Brooklyn.
But let's not kid ourselves. This will be a PG-13 movie for sure.
Yeah. And you just have that audience that has probably not really given this whole idea of a all-female team a lot of thought. But to me, this could be a huge seller because it has got such mass appeal. And especially with Harley Quinn right now being so popular, this is when you want to strike.
Well, absolutely. And those three characters also have such a firm grounding in Batman the Animated Series, mm-hmm. which is widely considered to be the greatest cartoon of all time. And so even people who just grew up watching that cartoon, you put Catwoman and Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy in a movie together. That's almost like a universal. People will be like, yeah, those characters are all more recognizable than most of the characters in Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
So, I think that's a win-win. I think that's a great idea. I am with you.
And let the casting insanity begin on this one.
Now, on I don't have a news story here in front of me, but also over the past week, we saw the trailer for Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yep.
Now, have you watched that trailer yet?
I have not watched it yet. I completely forgot about that trailer. Yeah.
So... I will say that I am extremely excited.
Good.
Obviously, Tom Holland, to me, from what I saw during Captain America Civil War, was so pitch perfect for this whole thing. And the trailer has a very Freaks and Geeks sort of vibe to it. It's definitely the high school sort of angst mixed in with the Spider-Man mythos. And you do see a little bit of the Vulture. You do see Michael Keaton. So
that is amazing.
That is, to me, looks like it's going to be awesome. And I was just very, very excited by the trailer, and I cannot wait to see more. And I don't feel like they spoiled a ton in the trailer, which was kind of cool as well, because the focus was a lot on Peter as this high school kid dealing with this, you know, just dealing with life.
Mm-hmm.
And you see Zendaya in the trailer as well. And you see, I think Liz Allen is going to be the love interest for Peter in this particular one, who now is the head of Alchemax in the current comic book. So I liked a lot of the stuff I saw from the trailer. There's a few moments with Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark in there that are just as sort of charming and funny as the moments they had together in Civil War. So I really liked it. I watched it like twice, and now I'm on media blackout because I've actually done the same thing with Rogue One. Like, I have not pored over the trailers. I have not read every article to find out what's going on because I'm trying to do that less and less now so that I don't get so spoiled ahead of time on what's going on. Like, I'm going into Rogue One fairly cold and I'm super excited about that. I just want the movie to wash over me. I just want to be completely immersed in it. Same thing with Spidey. It's coming out on my birthday.
Very cool.
This year. Super excited about that. I could not possibly be more excited about that.
I will tell you that I got caught up in the trailers for Dunkirk. They have a new, longer trailer.
Yep.
And that got me completely fired up. So I lost, between Rogue One and Dunkirk, I completely lost track of everything else in my life.
Yep.
Because I was so fired up about those. And what you were saying about going in cold is so interesting. As kids, think about those movies. We went in not knowing anything about anything except what we saw in the trailers and maybe a brief Rex Reed or, for us in New England, Cy Becker review.
Look at the movies.
Other than that, we went in completely cold and everything. And I'm almost going in knowing everything about Rogue One and I think just waiting for it to play off.
I think that's why even today, like when I go to the movies, if we miss the trailers, I don't even want to go to the movie anymore.
Yeah.
I am all about to see the trailers before the movie, which is ridiculous because you could already have watched the trailer 50 times on iTunes or wherever it comes out like immediately. And the kids these days don't have any, I think, of the same reverence for trailers. Like even my own kids, like it's cool when we see them in the theater together, but they're not like as completely obsessed as I am of like, okay, we got to get there. We got to get our stuff. We got to sit down. We got to get our seats because the trailers are going to come on. Like, and my wife completely does not understand that. But for me, and it's because of that. It's because of the whole, when we were kids, the trailer was your opportunity to know anything about that movie. And so much effort was put into creating an awesome trailer. And it still kind of is, today. So for me, that's my favorite part of the movies. And every time someone says, oh, I went to see such and such this way, I say, well, what did they have for trailers?
Yeah.
You went to see it. Did you see any good trailers with it? And people are always like, I don't remember. Like, I don't know.
Then
that's my most important thing is like, what trailers did they have along with that movie? So I'm sure with Rogue One, we're going to see Guardians of the Galaxy. We're probably going to see Spider-Man Homecoming. I know Despicable Me 3 is coming out. We'll probably see that one, Fast and the Furious. So I'm a big fan of the trailers in front of the movie.
I'm very glad that my family is the same way because that's something we'll talk about. Like if one of the kids will go to see a movie, they'll tell me about it. It's like, what trailers did you see?
Right.
Ah, they sucked.
Right.
Or they were terrible except for this one. Like we saw the trailer for the new Christopher Pratt movie. What is that space one.
It's Awakening, is it, or something?
Wake
like
up.
That? Or where they wake up on the spaceship.
And my daughter Becky saw that one about 5 or 6 months ago and has been counting down for this movie. So she's excited about that. Trailers, you know, if done right, they do the job.
They absolutely do. Now, in other news, Matthew, from ICV2, premier game developer Blizzard Entertainment, who I have mentioned on the show before, you might know from Diablo, you might know from Overwatch, you might know from Hearthstone. You might know from what is the other one that they do? StarCraft. So it's a premier game developer. Blizzard Entertainment is expanding into book publishing with a new imprint, Blizzard Publishing, dedicated to both new material and reprints of out-of-print material. Among some of Blizzard Publishing's first releases are reprints of the manga inspired by Blizzard's Warcraft property. Of course, World of Warcraft. Why did I mention that? Including two volumes of Warcraft Legends. The Warcraft Legends manga series was originally comprised of 5 volumes released by Tokyopop in 2008-09, and Blizzard plans to release imprints of the remaining volumes in 2017, along with manga based on Blizzard's other game lines. Now, the Blizzard Legends line of novels includes Warcraft The Last Guardian by Jeff Grubb and 2 novels by Christy Golden, Warcraft Lord of Clans, and Warcraft Rise of the Horde. Blizzard is also planning to release a series of full-color coffee table art books, beginning with Art of Hearthstone and Cinematic Art of StarCraft in 2017. In their press release, Blizzard indicated that the books are now available through book retailers and through their website. At present, the Blizzard Legends novels are on sale, but the Blizzard manga books are not available yet. This is Blizzard's first independent foray into publishing. In addition to Tokyopop, the company had previously released publications in partnership with Dark Horse. They did an Overwatch art book, and they did World of Warcraft Chronicle 2. At least one or more of the recent collaborations, Overwatch First Strike, was canceled because the book diverged from the accompanying game. Now, that's the reason I printed that story, is because at the time, when Overwatch was just getting ready to come out, Dark Horse had announced a partnership with Blizzard to do a comic book based on Overwatch. Overwatch as a shooter has a history that you see a lot of in the environments of the game and through the cutscenes of the game, but there's not like a campaign. And so a lot of the backstory you're getting through these sort of videos that they're putting out and stuff like that. So this comic book was going to feed into that whole canon of what the backstory is. And that project got canceled. And the reason that they gave at the time was because the final game, when it came out, ended up being a little bit different than what they had originally planned for the comic book. And so they didn't want to put it out because it wasn't necessarily representative of what was happening in the game. However, given that Blizzard now has its own publishing arm, I'm wondering if one other motivation of canceling that series is because perhaps they have plans to do more comic book properties through their own publishing arm in the future. And so that's kind of what I'm keeping my ear to the ground on, because Overwatch, I think, is a property that you could do movies with, you could do comics with, you can do, you know, a whole bunch of different stuff with. So I think we may see more from this publishing arm of Blizzard, and they are a huge publisher of some of the most popular games of the world. So you're going to see more coming out of this publishing arm. So I thought that was interesting. All right. That is all I have for news, sir.
Okay.
So before we jump into comics, in this frigidly cold weather, I should mention that my beard is being taken care of by Viking Oils, LLC.com, Beard Oils. And I always forget the name. It's Blood Something.
Yes.
Is the name of the oil that I use on my beard. But I cannot tell you how much of a savior that stuff is in this cold weather. Because my skin, I'm very fair skinned to begin with. Mm-hmm. I get sunburned very easily. My skin is always super dry. The skin under my beard, I don't even want to imagine right now if I wasn't using this stuff, like what it would be like on a day like today. It would just be completely brutal.
Yeah, and you don't think about things like that unless you're not doing it anymore. Like when I was growing mine, I would constantly be thinking after I started using Viking oil, I'm not scratching like I used to. I'm not itching it. I'm not playing with it, and it's not aggravating me.
And I would say it's been well over a year now that we have been, I think,
about a year,
doing our little partnership here with Viking oils. And I forget where it was. I know I told this story before, but where I didn't take it with me because I was going somewhere for a few days, and I was like, I'm not going to bring the bottle. I don't want it to break or whatever. And immediately I noticed a difference. Like even a couple days of not using it was a huge mm-hmm. difference for me. So especially in this weather, like that's a great stocking stuffer. So VikingOilsLLC.com, if you are looking for some stocking stuffers for the bearded person in your life,
yep.
they are – I have used this product long enough now to be able to confidently yes. say that it's great.
And I'll talk to Gary. I haven't seen Gary in probably 2 or 3 weeks, but we'll catch up. We'll see what styles are coming out, what flavors he's got going on, because I'm getting kind of itchy now to grow mine out again.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm tired of looking at your baby shaven yep. face over there, you know, and here's why you are very dismissive of the beard. It comes down to one thing. When you are bald, being able to grow a beard in some way is like your way of dealing with the fact that you can no longer grow hair on the top of your head.
Uh-huh.
When you have a full head of hair on the top of your head, you do not appreciate the beard in the same way because you can just grow your hair out. Like your hair right now, the top of your hair, you can let it grow long.
Yeah.
If you wanted to not cut your hair for a year, you could have shoulder length hair again. You could do that. I will never experience that again in my life.
Because it makes sense.
I am going bald.
I've been going bald
since my mid-20s. But the beard,
yeah,
I can grow the beard, and in some way it brings me back to the high school days of when I had long hair, and this is my only recourse now.
And for you bearded grower people, I can't grow one like yours. I could never ever do that in a million years.
It's almost like this karmic trade-off, you know
yeah.
what I mean? Like
yep.
But you still can grow the hair on the top of your head,
yep.
so you're good
Between
to go
Between us,
way.
We're the perfect person.
Absolutely. So let's jump into comics, and you were going to start us off today with the annual for a book that you have been loving from the very first issue, and that is Superman.
Yes. A friend of mine, John, was telling me that he read this, and he goes, I'm not going to tell you the guest star or any of the premise, but you will freak out when you read it. And I said, I don't normally like to get the books on the annuals because they're a lot more money and it's usually not the same creative team.
And it's usually not even related to what's actually happening in the book at that time.
Nope. So this one, Peter J. Tomasi and Patrick Gleason, the writers on Superman proper, are the writers on this one. And Jorge Jimenez is the artist, Alexandro Sanchez, the colorist. So we basically have the same team other than Jorge coming in. Jorge does a fantastic job on this one. So we start out with Clark Kent and Superman in Hamilton County. And he's looking down at his farmland and he's noticing the ground is all dried out. The fruit and vegetables that he's growing aren't growing quite like they should. And he's looking at it going, I don't understand what's going on. We've had plenty of water. There's plenty of heat. There's plenty of everything. Why is everything all drying out? And he says, you know what? Why don't I give it a view from up top? So he flies around up top. And as he's looking down, he's noticing that the ground is completely dried up. The quarries and ponds and streams are all dry. And as he's flying around, he goes over a bridge. And as he looks down, he sees that the water is completely dried up over there. But he sees a hole, all these little sinkholes where the water is starting to go through. So he's thinking, all right, somebody, something, or someone is taking the water out of the earth. And all of a sudden, you turn the next page, and I'll show you, Brian. You get this two-page shot of Superman face-to-face with Swamp Thing.
Which any appearance from Swamp Thing is always welcome.
And this is amazing. Swamp Thing is coming up out of the ground huge. And he says, you don't belong here anymore, to Superman. So Superman's looking down at him. He lands. And as he lands, Swamp Thing lays down a beat down. They have three or four pages of them punching each other and going at it. And he looks at him and he says, Superman? He goes, Dr. Alec Holland, or is it Swamp Thing? And he goes, you may call me Holland. And he goes, okay, I don't know what's going on and what the big issue is, but what are you saying I don't belong here anymore for? And Swamp Thing begins to explain to him that there's a disturbance in the green. Now, from what I remember of you telling me about the Swamp Thing during the New 52, the green is sort of the vegetation of the earth that Swamp Thing controls.
Right.
And you have the red, which is the rot.
No, the red is like the blood.
The blood, okay. And then you have the rot. So you have all these sort of...
It was almost like they were doing the whole thing with the Green Lanterns,
yep.
But they were doing it from a elemental forces, you know, sort of thing.
And yeah, so
Animal Man was the book that tied into the red,
yep.
And Swamp Thing was the book that tied into the green.
So the world's balance is basically in the hands of Swamp Thing and his people. Anybody that he alienates, they all represent something.
Right. He's the current avatar of the green, which means he's sort of the guardian of the green in our world.
So he explains to him that he goes, you know, Swamp Thing tells him, you're not Superman of this earth. And he goes, and I know that because for two reasons. Number one, you buried a Superman. There was a Superman that got buried. So his body is in the ground and that is affecting the green. That's
sure.
Affecting a lot of things. And secondly, you are vibrating at a different frequency. And if you think back to, if you know the whole history of why Earth 1 and Earth 2 can live in the same place,
right.
Plane, is because the Earths vibrate at a different frequency. So they can occupy the same space. Earth 2 is a little bit smaller than Earth 1. And I don't know the different sizes of all the other ones, but they vibrate at a different frequency. So the people there vibrate on a different frequency. And when you have somebody here like Superman, he explains, who is now living here, the vibrations are all off because it's not like you're here for a little bit and you go back to your Earth. You've
right.
Stayed here. And
you're like an anomaly.
You are starting to cause a lot of problems. And he's like, well, you got to understand, Swamp Thing, or Holland, that, you know, I'm here to help, and this is what I do. And he puts his hand on his shoulder, and as he does, this sort of blue energy comes out, freaks out Swamp Thing, turns him almost into like a blue-looking Swamp Thing, and he starts going on and talking in a different language. And now all of a sudden, he's speaking in Kryptonian. And now all of a sudden, all bets are off, and we are having another battle of the two of them where they are just going down and beating each other up. And as it's going on, Superman's going, all right, I didn't want to fight you, but now you leave me no choice. So they are going back and forth. And then Swamp Thing saying, you know, I don't want to fight you, Superman, either. I wish there was another way to do this. And he says, but what I'm trying to do is save this Earth. And you say you're here to help it, but you're really hurting it right now. And he says, well, you know what? That's kind of an interesting conversation. And all of a sudden he goes into a spin move, starts spinning around. Swamp Thing isn't just the form that he is. He's basically the top part of his body with this huge long root that's stuck into the ground. So he's kind of going around. They're going at it and fighting. Wails him in the face. He says, are you ready to talk? And he's like, well, I'm afraid that we're kind of beyond the point of talking. And I'll show you again, Brian, another two-page shot of like seven or eight different Swamp Things all popping out of the ground.
Right, because he can basically use any green that's around him
yep.
to manifest however he wants to.
And they start fighting and they start punching each other. And as they're going on, all of a sudden you have Superman, like he gets into Superman's head and he's seeing Superman. Superman saying, this is my home, my family's home. I can't leave it. I won't harm it. There has to be another way for me to be able to stay here. And then on the other page, you have Swamp Thing explaining, you have to leave here. This is not working out. And then Superman, he gets in Superman's mind and sees all the things. He sees his family. He sees the love that he has for his fellow man, everything going on. And at the end of it, there's like a picture of almost Swamp Thing turning into Spawn. And he's screaming at him and yelling at him and explaining a lot of things that, he's saying, you're still holding on to your Earth. And then Superman's like, wait a minute, what did you say? And he goes, yeah, you're still holding on to your Earth. The problem is you haven't become part of this Earth. You're still holding on to that one. You still consider yourself a stranger. You still consider yourself another Superman. The second you start considering yourself the Superman of this earth and forget everything else, then everything will have a balance and everything will be there. And then Swamp Thing starts to absorb Superman, and there is a great couple pages where all of a sudden within Swamp Thing you see Superman where he would rip off his shirt, exposing the big S. He rips off the Swamp Thing's skin and flesh and becomes Superman. He comes flying out of the ground. He's over the river that was once barren and dry, and Holland comes out of the ground, and he's saying, you know what, my best efforts coupled with those of your heart and the trees around us, I think really did this. And he's like, you know, I just wish that we could have done this a little bit better. And he pulls a flower off of him and he says, hey, a little souvenir. And he goes, you know, I hear it's pretty good to talk to plants, Holland. And he goes, that is correct. And then as he goes into the ground, he says, but, you know, he says, whatever you think, we're always listening. And then you have a scene where on you have Clark and Lois and Jonathan having dinner. And Lois says to him, did you finish your chores? And he's like, no, I started to mow the lawn up front. And you see on the table, there is a flower, the flower that he pulled off of Swamp Thing. And he puts it in a pot. And he says, you know what? Why don't you let the lawn grow an extra week? And he goes, really? And he goes, sure. And he says, nothing wrong with watching some grass grow sometimes. And that is where that is how this issue ends. So a fantastic, fantastic issue. John, thank you so much for recommending it. Again, I'm going to keep saying this. And with Christmas coming, and we now have all of the hardcover collections, there is the hardcover collection of Superman Volume 1, Son of Superman, that collects the first 5 or 6 issues in the current arc. And if you did not get the individual issues, pick this book up, because this is by far the best book each month. And I think that that's a big reason why DC is having so much success with this, is that their flagship character, their original official flagship character, is now the best written, best drawn, best comic, bar none, each month.
Whoa.
Yes.
That is a statement.
Yes.
From Mr. Matthew Herring. And we know that on this show, we are not prone at all to hyperbole. So
no.
That is, you could take that as word is gold.
And we're talking, like, if we were talking about that with the X-Men, there must be some merit to it, because you and I weren't reading Superman. We weren't big on it. And all of a sudden, Superman's back.
Oh, I will totally agree with you. Superman is a great, great book right now. Another great book, Matthew, Amazing Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we are in the middle of the event, The Clone Conspiracy. Now, we've mentioned this on the show before. I am an unabashed fan of the Clone Saga.
You.
I love it. And I was actually looking. You could still go back and listen. If you listen to the show and you want to go back to back episodes, you can hear the panel that I did with Todd DeZago and Scott Hanna and Danny Fingeroth at what is now Terrificon a few years
yes.
ago about the Clone Saga. But the Clone Conspiracy, what we have here is we have a new player in the Spider Universe. We have this company called New U Technologies, and what they are purporting to be able to do is be able to regrow organs from people's original tissue and in fact regrow entire bodies without any of the disease or injuries or any conditions or anything like that. And so what's been happening is this company is becoming very popular, and Peter has figured out that they're basically cloning people, and the Jackal's behind it. And so what we've also found out in the meantime is that Kane, who is a clone of Peter Parker's, and the Gwen Stacy of the Spider-Gwen world have found out that there are other parallel worlds where New U Technologies showed up and was able to use this new cloning thing and everything. But what happened in all of those worlds is the clones went bad and turned into these zombie-like creatures called Carrions. And so Kane has come to this world because what they figured out is in that each of these worlds where things have gone really badly with this whole clone thing, it is because in those worlds, Peter Parker himself ended up working with New U Technologies. And when Parker Industries and New U Technologies work together, bad things happen. So they've come to this world to prevent that. So for the past few weeks, Gwen from the Spider-Gwen world has been masquerading as Gwen the clone at New U Technologies. And what happened in the last issue is that Spidey arrived on the scene. They both got found out, and now they're on the run from all the people that the Jackal has resurrected. And so they're on the run from Prowler and Tarantula and Electro and Mysterio and all of these people that they have resurrected. But the Jackal has given them specific orders not to kill Spider-Man, not to kill Gwen, he wants them brought back in. He's been basically saying from the beginning, we're not about killing people. We're about bringing people back. And so from the get-go, the Jackal has been saying these things that almost have you questioning, like, what is his real end game here? Because he's not, he doesn't seem like he's out to destroy Spider-Man at this point. And so meanwhile, we go over to Horizon University, where Kane is meeting with the scientists over at Horizon and Anna Maria Marconi and Max Modell. And they have the clone Gwen Stacy that they've captured there. And she's saying, look, I need my medication. I need my medication. And it's because all the clones that have come back have to take a pill once a day. And if they don't take this pill, their bodies will start to deteriorate. And that's how the Jackal has sort of kept them loyal to him, among other means, is that they depend on him for this medication. And so Kane is saying, no, you need to give it to her, because if you don't, she's going to turn into one of these carrion things that have been infecting these other worlds. And they're all sitting there saying, well, how do you know that? Why would you how do you know what's going on with these clones? And he takes off his shirt. And he says, because I am a clone. And you see that his body is starting to deteriorate. But because he is one of the original clones, there is some level of immunity to this carrion disease. Even though his own body is degrading, he is not a carrier. He's not someone who can infect other people and stuff like that. And so Anna Maria Marconi is like, you're an idiot. You should have told us that from the beginning, because then we could have tried to figure out what's different about your body. You might be the key to stopping whatever this infection is. And so they're trying to work on that. And they're saying, well, we need to call the police now. Things are getting out of hand. We now know that whatever's going on at New U, it's not good. We know that the Jackal's behind it. We need to alert the police. And so they call the police, and you see that the detective that picks up, or the chief that picks up the telephone call, is someone who is a clone of the Jackal's employ. And so she's going to now send people to go get them. The Jackal is back at his headquarters saying, look, we've been discovered. People know where we are now. So we have to go to our site B. In the meantime, I've got a stop to make. I'm going to go do that. You guys have to go out and find Spider-Man and find Gwen and bring them back, and also go find the clone Gwen and bring her back as well. And so the Rhino and the new Electro end up going to Horizon, and they break into the place and they beat up Kane and they get Gwen back, and they decide to take Kane with them. And Anna Maria Marconi says, I want to go with you too, because I might know how to help in this situation. So she doesn't want to get sort of left behind, and she volunteers to go. And what the whole thing is building to is that they find out that the Jackal has been getting genetic material to do these cloning experiments, and he's about to meet his dealers, and he's going to be getting some new material so he can continue to do some cloning stuff. And Spidey, from an unlikely ally, the Kingpin, gets the location of where this meeting is going to take place. Because I don't know if we talked about this issue before, but there was an issue where the Jackal went to Wilson Fisk and said, I brought back your wife and I want you to work with me. So I've brought back your wife. And sure enough, his wife, Vanessa, I think Vanessa. Her name is talking to him. He ends up breaking her neck. And he says to the Jackal, that is not my wife. And now you and I are enemies sort of forever. And he refuses to work with the Jackal, and he leaves and goes away. So he comes to Spider-Man when Spider-Man is trying to figure out what he's going to do next and how he can track down the Jackal. And Fisk says, I'll give you this information, but then you're going to owe me a favor. And Peter says, oh, no, he cloned your wife. I know that he has offended you more than anything has ever offended you before. If I take that file from you and I bring down the Jackal, you're going to owe me. And so Peter kind of turns the tables on him, and he says, fine, take it. So they go down, and they're going to figure out where the Jackal's having this meeting. And this is issue number 3 of this event. And sure enough, the issue climaxes with Spidey having a confrontation with the Jackal. And the Jackal is not the old-looking Miles Warren dude that we've seen before, or the green furry guy that showed up during Spider Island. This is a guy who looks to be around the same age as Peter. And so when Peter shows up to this meet that they're having and ends up getting into a fight with the Jackal, he's very surprised at how strong the Jackal is. He's very surprised at how agile the Jackal is. And the banter going back and forth is kind of interesting, where, you know, Peter's the Jackal saying, is this about your secret identity? You know, don't worry. Both of those men that you knocked out are unconscious. You know, I enjoy being one of the few who knows who it is under that mask. It gives me an advantage. And Spider-Man is saying, why do you keep messing with me? Why do you keep turning my life upside down, bringing my loved ones and my worst enemies back from the dead? you know, I'm stopping this. And the Jackal the whole time is saying, no, just listen to me. Just listen to me. I have a plan. And at one point, Peter goes to punch him and Jackal like punches him in the throat and it kind of knocks Peter back. And he's like, that's not possible. You'd never been this strong. And he says, I'm no stronger or faster than you are. And Spidey's saying, but you're just some crazy mad scientist in a stupid red suit. And he says, please, Peter, this is darker than red. And here's where the spoiler comes if you want to block your ears for the next 10 seconds. And he says, it's more of a, and he turns the page and says, Scarlet.
Oh.
Because the Jackal is Ben Reilly.
Wow.
And so he's like, Ben, it can't be you. And he's like, it is me. And if you just listen to me, I'm trying to do good here. And he says, the material that was getting delivered to me is Uncle Ben's body.
Oh.
And if you work with me, the two of us can bring Uncle Ben back to life. And that's how the issue ends. And so, humongous reveal.
Yeah.
I may not have mentioned up front, but Dan Slott is writing this. Jim Chung is the penciler. John Dell is the inker. Justin Ponsor does the colors. Our buddy Joe Caramagna does the letters on this one. And Nick Lowe is the editor. So, and this was my suspicion from the get-go. Is that this new Jackal was Ben Reilly, and in fact, it is Ben Reilly. And I love it because what Dan Slott has been very thoughtful about doing through this process is the Jackal hasn't really been a bad guy in this storyline. And so he's really playing this from a standpoint of Ben Reilly is believing, at least, that he's doing something good, that this is for a good cause, and he really does want to get Peter on his side. And so he has, you know, he's offering now to bring Uncle Ben back. He said, we can do this together. We can bring Uncle Ben back. And that's the way it ends. But we know from what Kane was telling everyone that in all of these previous worlds that they visited, Peter has teamed up with the Jackal. And in those worlds, the clones always go bad and they always turn into these carrion things and the world's, you know, plunged into absolute chaos. And so now we're seeing that may actually happen here, because the whole time Peter's been saying, there's no way I'm going to team up with this guy. Why would I ever do that? Well, here we are. And he's offering to be able to bring Uncle Ben back. And so very interesting. I would imagine extremely polarizing, not even so much the Ben Reilly thing, because I do feel like people, even if they didn't like the Clone Saga, are kind of excited that Ben Reilly is back. But the whole idea of Uncle Ben potentially being brought back to life is akin to, you know, the whole marriage thing with Spike. Like, this is another one of those, you know, Mephisto type of situations where there's going to be people that are very divided depending on how the storyline ends up. But I have absolutely loved it. I've said it time and time again. I love Slott's run on this. I have every faith that he knows what he's doing, because he's always been very respectful, I think, of Spider-Man's legacy. So, super excited about that. And that was a great reveal. And I was clapping with joy when I read it.
So I know you've been reading this one from the beginning, and I know that you've been a huge fan of Giuseppe Camuncoli's art.
Absolutely.
Are you sad that he's not on the book right now?
Well, he has been on and off, and it's not clear because somebody else is coming on the book with issue with number 25. And I don't know if that means that Camuncoli is off permanently, but he's an artist that I will follow on whatever book he's going, because he's been great on this.
Well, I'm going to tell you where he's going in a little bit.
Okay.
So that's your little teaser. So
I know he's doing a book over at Image, I believe. And he's got a couple other things going on, but I haven't been able to find definitively, like, is he no longer part of the Spider-Man art stable?
So the book that I'm going to talk about right now, Suicide Squad number 8, I have not been reading Suicide Squad. I picked up the first DC Rebirth issue, read it, and thought, you know what? It's okay. I'm not completely enamored with it. It didn't really grab me. It was sort of like the movie. Like, the movie was good, but I'm not running out to go.
No, I'll watch it again when it comes on Netflix.
Yep. And I think I might have put it on my Christmas list, but the book, sadly, I have not bought. And I've been starting to do with something a little different now, where with Aquaman, with Green Lanterns, I'm grabbing books and doing different arcs for the biweekly books. I'll grab a certain arc out of one and just read that. But Suicide Squad's a monthly. So I picked up 5, 6, 7, and 8 at the same time and read them all. And part of the arc going on right now, it's called Going Sane. Now, one of the biggest things that I got fired up about was each part 1, 2, 3, 4 are Ramones songs in the titles.
Oh.
So the one of them was Beat on the Brat, Teenage Lobotomy. I forgot the other one, but part four is one of the greatest Ramones songs of all time, I Believe in Miracles. So I was really excited to see that one. The creative team on this one was is Rob Williams, the writer. Jim Lee is the penciler. He's been the penciler on this entire arc. Scott Williams, Richard Freen, Friend, and Sandra Hope are the inkers. Jeremiah Sharp, the colorer, and Pat Brusso is the letterer. So what has been going on with this particular series or this arc is that General Zod has been trapped in a pod. And this pod has been brought to Louisiana in the swamps, where the Suicide Squad prison operations headquarters are located. And as they have started to open it up, all bad things are starting to happen. Everybody's really? Starting to get, yeah, it never,
that's shocking.
Never works.
Opening Zod's cryopod or whatever it is leads to bad things.
So they have them out there. And basically what has gone on is it has made everybody insane. But it's interesting that it didn't make everybody insane, because once we found out that Killer Croc and then and June Moon had a little tryst, because the thing that brought out – you can't get somebody like Killer Croc. You can't make him more rage-filled, and you can't get the Enchantress and make her more angry at the world. So what it did was it kind of festered into their loving side that they never are in touch with, and the two of them had a little fun.
Oh.
So – that was pretty interesting, because the first page, we begin with the afterglow of that particular moment. And you've got everybody starting to kill each other. Harley Quinn decided that she was going to be, because she can't get any more crazy, she was going to go back and be a psychiatrist.
Oh.
So she got on her jacket, started going around and diagnosing everybody as everybody shooting each other. Amanda Waller's ready to shoot people. All this stuff is going on. And you've got Flag, who is in charge of this whole thing, and he is screaming and hollering, going, we need to get this Zod thing out of here or back in his pod. And you have Amanda Waller, who's now in there right now, calling him a space Nazi, and then realizing, oh, this isn't good. He's waking up, and this might even get a little worse. So also, too, Boomerang is dead.
Oh.
Or he's in the Phantom Zone. That will play out in a little bit, because it's pretty funny how they work this one. But they have to do – they've got to get the Enchantress somehow involved in this, because Zod is becoming bigger than they can handle. So they get Enchantress out of there, and that freaks out Killer Croc, because for a minute ago he was with June and having a great time, and now all of a sudden she's the Enchantress. So they put Killer Croc in like a frozen block of ice. They get on the ice and they ride it out through this firefight that's going on. And elsewhere you have this vision of Captain Boomerang, who is talking to this girl, who is part of the group as well. And I don't know exactly who she is. I think her name is Chip or something like that. But she is there and talking to this image. And Boomerang is like, I must be a god. That's it. I'm a god now, because he's looking in he doesn't have a body. So he's just assuming he's God. She's kind of saying, you're probably in the Phantom Zone, dude. That's where you are right now. You're not
God. It's actually totally worse than that.
Yeah, which I thought was hysterical, because as he's going on with this, you see him just facepalm. And it's like, oh, I can't believe this. He's like, yeah, I thought things were going to get better for me. And then all of a sudden, the team comes in. There's just battling and fighting going on everywhere. And as we get to a little bit more soldiers are jumping in. You've got Killer Croc, who is now out of control, because June is now out of her thing. So he's starting to get fighty, getting all crazy. Now General Zod is now free. There is a battle going on with them. And then with Zod, the best part is Zod gets out of his little he was on a table all locked up. And all of a sudden there's an explosion and you've got Captain Boomerang back. And he's like, holy cow, I'm back. I got legs. Look at me. I'm back, baby. Captain Bloody Boomerang in full effect. And you've got the team looking at him going, he doesn't know that Zod is right behind him and he's going to do some damage. So they're all kind of like, well, we feel strange. We don't know what's going on. And Zod is trying to affect them. Captain Boomerang turns around, throws a boomerang at him. And he's screaming at him, going, you know what? I'm not Captain Boomerang anymore. Call me General Boomerang. And then Zod just stands there and looks at him like he's ready to blast him, and then falls right on Captain Boomerang. And he's crushed him underneath it. And that is sort of how that battle ends. And then you have later on, you've got Amanda Waller trying to explain, saying, you know, We've got to secure General Zod. We've got to make sure that this doesn't happen again. Great that we got Boomerang back and Flag is back and everybody's here. So we need to figure this one out. And they're like, well, you know, where's Harley? So you see that Harley is over there and she goes over going, Dr. Quinzel, you did it. You just helped save all of us. You made us all better. And she's like, oh, I guess I did. And I'm glad, Amanda, because your person and your people are all love them. And I love them. And they drove me crazy. Where's Puddin? And then she starts laughing. So Harley is now back to her insanity. So that is how that story ends. But the big part of this is the fact that this is the prelude to Justice League versus Suicide Squad. And a lot of times when you get a prelude book, when you get something that's part of a big event, they jam you with the price. And I first picked up this book off the shelf without looking at the price and could feel that it was thicker. There's more pages. There's this huge center spread in the middle. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be a $4 or $5 book, still $2.99. So they gave you extra stuff, basically extra stuff for free is the way you can look at it. In the middle of it is an interview with Joshua Williamson, who's the writer of it. And then inside you get all these pictures of all the players that are going to be in this. And apparently Lobo is going to be coming back. And it isn't that Lobo from the New 52 that was really crappy. It's the old school Lobo with his hooks and his craziness and all sorts of stuff. But you've got Eclipso. You've got all sorts of villains that we haven't seen in a while. And the little elevator pitch is 8 heroes, 7 villains, 6 worst villains, 1 worst villain. The countdown is on for the most dangerous super showdown in comic history. Lock and loaded for issue number 1 of Justice League versus Suicide Squad, December 21st on sale. So as you're getting kind of fired up about that one, you turn to the last few pages, and you have a preview of what is going on in this story. And you see that they have captured Killer Frost. And they have brought Killer Frost to the Louisiana swampland where Belrive Penitentiary is. And as she's coming off of it, they're calling her Caitlin Snow. They're being very referencey to her alter ego, which I think is sort of that, you know what, we're going to bridge the gap.
Right.
This is Caitlin Snow, folks. This is the one you know. So she comes in and she gets off the ship. And it's really interesting because when you see her landing, at first my thought was, oh, it's Mr. Freeze. That's who it's got to be. You see them all in snowsuits. They're talking about the temperature. And as she comes off of it, now the artist on this, Giuseppe Camuncoli. So I believe he's doing the art for the Justice League Suicide Squad team up.
Oh.
So as
I have really come to love his artwork.
And I really like it here. It's very – there's a certain old school feel to it.
Yeah.
And I really, really, really enjoy that. So as he is she's getting off the ship and she's talking to everybody. And she's like, you know, oh, yeah, those suits are great, but I can still feel you. And I'm really hungry right now. So as they're going through and they're saying, well, the suits will come off soon, Dr. Frost, when we have you under control. And they bring her into this room and they're talking to her and she's introducing and meeting everybody on the team. And she's fascinated by El Diablo, who's sitting in his cell, just burning up all over the place. And as she walks in, she goes in and meets Amanda Waller, who's saying, you know, the temperature of this room is below zero. So please don't attempt to use your powers. She goes, my name's Amanda Waller. Task Force is under my control. And she says, I'd like to offer you a deal that you join our team and I can get your sentence dropped, even clean your slate. But what you have to agree to is that I am going to inject this bomb into your brain. And she's got a gun with a needle on it and says, so if you escape, I will detonate it and blow your head off. And then you have Caitlin kind of narrating in her head going, my dad always said everyone has a warm heart. Some just keep it buried deep down under. And as she's listening to Amanda make all these threats, she looks over at Amanda and she goes, well, my daddy was wrong. And that is where it ends. So we are getting ready for Justice League Suicide Squad. It's going to be a weekly event going back and forth. And that was one of the reasons why I was a little interested in catching up or picking up these books just to see what was going on in Suicide Squad to catch up. But we have got a lot of cool things that are going on. And if some of the pictures I'm seeing in here are an indication of how good it's going to be, this thing is going to be phenomenal. But an ad in here, Brian, that I had to point out, Justice League and the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers team up.
Oh, nice.
That is going to be a good one. I just picked up Batman the Animated Series and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 1.
Really?
So they're doing a lot of these crossovers like that. And there's a story in here that talks a little bit about Supergirl being super, which almost looks like it's going to really tie into the show more than the current Supergirl comic that you're reading. Huh. December 28th, Supergirl Being Super is the name of that. It's a 6-issue series. So a lot of cool stuff going on, but definitely fired up about this one.
All right. Well, we are going to end our books today with the new Venom series over at Marvel. Now, I had not read – I read a little bit of Venom Space Knight, but for the past at least few runs of and few years of Venom, Venom has been Flash Thompson.
Yes.
Flash had bonded with the symbiote. He was – in our world, he was part of Spider Island. He was part of a whole bunch of different stuff around here. And then somehow he became, I believe, a member of the Guardians of the Galaxy, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
And he was Venom Space Knight, as opposed to Rom Space Knight. Yep. And that series, I believe Ariel Olivetti was at least doing the artwork for part of that series. And I grabbed a bunch of those issues just because they look absolutely ridiculously amazing. But somewhere along the way, Matthew, Flash Thompson is no longer bonded with the symbiote.
Mm.
And so as we start this new series, and this series is written by Mike Costa, who we just talked about, I believe, in the last episode, the last issue of Web Warriors,
yes,
which was what he was writing before. Now he's writing this series, and Gerardo Sandoval is the artist. Dano Sanchez-Amara is the colorist. Clayton Cole's the letterer. And the editor here is Devin Lewis. And so as we open this book, the symbiote has no host. And so we start off, and there is someone narrating, and we meet a new character. And the narrator saying, you know, one thing this world has taught me is that it's hard to be a good guy. Bad guys have it much easier. Given years, given a measure of power, it's easier to use it selfishly, easier to take than to give. And so we know that that whole dynamic has always been part of Venom, right?
Mm.
It's the, do I use this power for good? Do I use this power for evil? For many years now, Venom has been sort of this anti-hero. He's been, you know, ultimately at the end of the day, a good guy, even though he's capable of doing bad things. Now we start off with this guy, by the name of Lee, and he's looks like he's kind of down on his luck a little bit. He's looking at a thing that says that his rent's past due, and he's kind of walking down this alley, and he's got a text message from his friend named Tony, who's saying, if you still need work, meet me at the diner in an hour. So he's off to meet his friend. You see that the alley that he's walking through up in the shadows is none other than the symbiote. And the symbiote is looking very sickly, very, very sort of skinny and almost like malnourished. And you realize that it's the symbiote that's talking. The symbiote saying, what's worse is that I've learned that, you know, being a good guy, it takes strength. It takes help. And he's saying, I'm just looking for a little help. And so you're seeing that as he's sitting there in the shadows, maybe he's going to bond with this guy. But this guy, Lee, goes into this diner, and in the diner is his friend Tony and Mac Gargan, who used to be the Scorpion,
yeah,
and at one point in time was bonded with the Venom symbiote as well. We find out that Mac is now working for Alchemax in security, but he's also doing a little side business for the Black Cat, who is a crime boss now in this current comics landscape. And so this guy Lee comes in, and Gargan's kind of sizing him up and saying, "What, you know, what's your deal? I heard you got some military experience." And he's saying, "Yep, but you know, I was an Army Ranger at one point." And Gargan saying, you ever kill anybody? And he's like, yeah, does this job require me to kill people? And he's like, no, we run a strictly transaction-based business, a non-lethal business. And he's like, yeah, whatever, buddy. And Gargan's like, I don't know if I like you yet. And so they're kind of talking back and forth. And his buddy Tony is saying, oh, no, he's just nervous. He's not a bad guy. He's a good guy. You'll like working with him. And so Gargan's kind of saying, I need to know a little bit more about you. And so he pulls off a glove, and you see that Lee is missing 2 fingers on his left hand. And he's saying, I was wounded in action and discharged from the Rangers. In order to get my benefits, which still haven't come through, I'm classified as disabled, which, you know, bounces me out of the running for any domestic security work. So I live in New York, and New York is my home, and I need work. So I'm just a guy looking for a job here. Help me out. Mm. And so Gargan's like, okay, so I just need you to look like you can kill somebody. You're going to meet tonight at this place because there is an exchange happening, and this is your first job you're going to be doing with us. So he's like, okay. And then Gargan leaves. You see the symbiote who's out in the alleyway, and he ends up having to bond with a guy who may or may not be homeless, but is certainly kind of struggling and not looking so good himself. But the symbiote cannot exist for an overly long period of time without bonding to someone. Like, it can exist. That was shown in the series of Venom Space Knight, is that it could separate from Flash,
yep.
but it couldn't exist for an overly long time. And so it ends up having to bond with this poor guy in the alley, and that guy himself is barely alive. And so it's not a good match. So now we fast forward to the exchange that's happening later on that night, and you see that Lee is now brought here, and the guys that are coming to pick up whatever they're bringing is are in the employ of Tombstone. And so these guys show up, and they're like, hey, Tombstone thanks you for your donation. You guys can run along now. And Tony, the guy that's with Lee, is saying, what do you mean run along now? Where's the payment? And they said, your payment is that you get to stay alive, because our boss isn't going to bow down to some, you know, supermodel in spandex. He's thrown a shot at, yeah. you know, Black Cat. And so the deal starts to go bad. And one of them points a gun at Lee. And just as they do that, who comes busting through the wall but Venom, bonded to this old man? And when the old man sees that Lee is standing there, it comes off of the old man and bonds to him. And as soon as it bonds to him, the symbiote is thinking, this is going to be great. Here's this guy who I'm helping out because he's about to get killed, but also, you know, maybe we can do good things. Because the symbiote at this point has been, something happened through the Space Knight series where it was like purified. So all of the hate and rage mm-hmm. and all that other kind of stuff, kind of not as present anymore. So the symbiote is actually capable of being good and wants to be good and bonds with this guy, Lee. And the big twist here is that as it bonds with Lee, you get this flashback in both of their heads. So you see everything the symbiote has been through, and you see everything that Lee has been through, the stuff that happened in the war. And he's talking about how he learned the lesson that, you know, you look out for the other guy, but when you do, sometimes bad things happen. And so he bonds with the symbiote, and you're seeing that when he does, he's not as good of a guy as the symbiote thought he was going to be. And so the first thing that Lee does when he bonds with the symbiote, and I'll show you the big splash, is that he turns around and he kills all of Tombstone's guys immediately. And then after he does that, his friend is saying to him, buddy, whatever's going on, whatever that suit is, like, come back to me. And so he finally is able to subdue the symbiote and put the symbiote away. But we find out that now that he has this power, he's kind of thinking, I need to maybe keep this a secret and not let people know about it. And his buddy Tony's like, yeah, that's a good idea. We don't need any, you know, extra flack. This already went poorly, you know, and if you're going to be working with us, we should probably, you know, come up with a better plan. And he's like, oh, no, no. When I said we, I meant me and the symbiote. And he kills his buddy, who he's known since he was a kid. And that's when you get another look inside of his head, and you see that he lost his mom in a fire when he was young. His dad sort of left him. He ended up becoming like a ward of the state. He's seen a lot of things, and his attitude over the years is that he needs to look out for himself, and that's exactly what he's going to do now that he has the symbiote. And so the last couple pages show him taking all of the ammunition and weapons that were being brought to this drop, and he takes them with him, and he has them all now, and he's also got the symbiote in his control, and that's the way the first issue ends. And so here you have a symbiote who wants to do good and has bonded with a guy who's bad.
Yeah.
And so that's how it ends. And so what they talk about in the back, in the sort of letters page, is that this is a series about Venom being bad again.
Mm.
Because he's been kind of this hero for a long time. And if anything, the dynamic is flipped, where you have someone who is out to do evil.
Yes.
Who is now subduing a symbiote who wants to do good, which is usually it's the exact opposite. So I thought it was a cool switch of the dynamic, and I think the artwork is fantastic, and the first issue really was a good twist. Like, it definitely kept my interest for wanting to check out more. So I'm interested to see where this series goes, not only because I want him to run into Spider-Man at some point, but they mention Tombstone. They mention the Black Cat. If the idea of this series is that it's going to get down to sort of the street level organized crime stuff that's going on in the background of the sort of spider landscape, I really, really dig that. That's sort of a daredevil level kind of book, yeah. that I think that doesn't get explored as much. This, you know, sort of what's been happening in the wake of the Kingpin running everything, you know. So pretty good start to the series. So yeah, I've really enjoyed that first issue. Definitely be picking up more. That is it for our comics. That is going to do it for this episode of the Secret Identity Podcast. So for Mr. Matthew Herring, this is Brian Letendry signing off. I don't know if we will get an episode in prior to Christmas. if we do not, have a wonderful Christmas, have a wonderful, we'll probably get one in before New Year's, I'm sure. But if we don't talk to you before then, have a fantastic holiday, and we will certainly talk to you soon.
Ho, ho, ho.
The rest of the comic publishing world may finally be arriving to the party, but Drive-Thru Comics is the one that started it all. The first downloadable comic shop is still leading the way when it comes to digital comics. Featuring hundreds of publishers, excellent prices, and top-notch customer service, Drive-Thru is a great experience all around. Another thing that sets Drive-Thru apart from a lot of other digital comics platforms is this. When you buy a comic, you own it. You get a watermarked PDF file that you can read on your laptop, your tablet, phone, or any other device. You choose how you enjoy the comics you buy. So head over to drivethroughcomics.com today, and on your way to checking out, download a free issue of Secret Identity.